Elissa Walker Campbell delivers sports the way you want it. Big names, bold interviews, beyond the X's and O's. Think big.
Elissa Walker Campbell, indeed, it is another big weekend in college football. And with the Texas A&M Aggies coming off their third straight win and an impressive one against the Sooners at Kyle Field last Saturday night, we had to dial up our favorite Aggie, the great R.C. Slocum. First of all, Coach, congratulations on another big win. It's wonderful to have you back with us. But I think back to the month of August, you had a pretty big speaking engagement. You were getting ready to address the 2010 commencement speech for the summer graduating class. I did get a chance to watch that online. I thought you did a beautiful job.
Well, thank you. That was fun. That was a great honor for me. After having spent many years here watching kids come in and spend their time here and get their degrees, it was fun for me to get to talk to them, and I really appreciate the university allowing me to do that.
Well, it certainly was a very inspirational speech, too. You know, you think back, you grew up in Orange, Texas. I didn't know that you shined shoes at a local barbershop. How much money did you make during that time?
You know, I still have the shine box, and on the side of it, you can see where I marked through to 15 cents and went up to 25 cents. So 25 cents a shine. So in a day's time, you know, you could get 10 or 15 shines in a day's time. That was big money back in those days.
Making some big bucks. And I want to hold it against you. One of the things that you did share in that commencement speech, you brought up talking about staying on course. And of course, when the Oklahoma Sooners came into College Station in 2002, they were ranked number one in the country. And the Aggies found a way to look up to that challenge and to beat OU, what, 30-26?
That was a big win, and the point I was making with those graduates is you go through life, don't let others limit what you can do. You set the limits and work hard and be diligent, and the sky's the limit. No one really expected our team to win that game. And if you were an outsider looking, there'd be good reasons why you wouldn't, but it doesn't always turn out like that. And if you're willing to work hard and believe and trust in your teammates, you've got a chance, and life's that way. There have been spectacular things accomplished in life by people that didn't have a whole lot more than they just believed they could do it and were willing to work hard to make it happen.
Well, R.C., you just shared so many wonderful gold nuggets. I know it was very inspirational to listen to. And let's move ahead. Let's talk about the Aggies right now. What a rebuilding effort and turnaround for Mike Sherman's team. It has not been easy, and really they are making some strides, and it's been really a breakthrough season. Can you talk about that?
The things, as I look at this team this year, one of the areas, I think it's really hard to be a good team unless you can play good defense. And the biggest improvement on A&M's team has been in the offseason, Mike hired a guy named Tim DeRuiter, who has a really good coaching background. Most recently, he had been at the Air Force and had done a great job there. But he came in, went back to the 3-4 defense, which we'd used for a long time here, and moved some personnel around, and I think just created a different attitude. And they have gotten better every week and really played superbly against Oklahoma. Had several three really good goal line stands. And that's allowed our team to stay in ball games. We've had an unusual year on offense. The young man Gerard Johnson has done a great job, has done some great things for university, is really a fine young man. But in the off season he had a shoulder surgery, and I don't know if it's a result of that or a combination of things, but he's had an off season this year and got to the point where Coach Sherman tried the backup quarterback, Ryan Tannehill, who's been a starting receiver for us. And Ryan has come in there and really there's been a little different spark or whatever, but we've since he started, we've been undefeated. So I think our team, I think it's all just coming together. We're young in the offensive line, but we're getting some experience there. We've gotten better players there than what we've had. And so I think our team's getting better, and I think that we'll have a chance. We've got several games left here, and we'll have a chance to win any one of those games or could possibly win all of those games.
Of course, Texas A&M will be on the road on Saturday. They will be in Waco, Texas, taking on the Baylor Bears. That's not going to be an easy challenge, but I really have to agree with you. You know, R.C., just what impressed me so much last Saturday night against Oklahoma is this team has been energized by their defense. I mean, you could hear Wrecking Crew chants being heard from the bleachers and Kyle Field.
Yeah, I was really, they played great. I mean, I've I'm so happy for them. I know how hard they worked, and it's fun to see it paying off. And I told Mike that this week I'm happy for him because he stayed the course. He's not made excuses. He's taken it on the chin, and there've been a typical coaching position. You know, I mean, he's had some unbelievable things sent his way in terms of criticism, and he's not really paid a whole lot of attention to all that. Has stayed steady and been a strong leader, and I think now his efforts are showing up with the team.
Any head coach goes through periods like that. How do you make it through those dark times?
I think you there has to be a belief system that you trust in yourself, and friends around you can support you. But bottom line, there has to be some character, you know, that you've developed over the years, and a belief that what you're doing is right, and the courage and conviction. I kept on my board when I coached on the wall. I kept a deal that Abraham Lincoln had when he was president and going through one of the most difficult, challenging times in our nation's history. And he was unpopular in a lot of quarters, but he had this little saying on his wall. He said, if I were to read, much less answer all the criticisms that come in this office, I would have time to do no other business. I do the best I can, and I mean to keep doing so until the end. If the end brings me out right, I'll be all right. If the end brings me out wrong, 10 angels swearing I was right would make no difference. So here's a guy now we look back as perhaps the greatest president we've ever had, but there was a time when the country was torn apart, going through a horrible civil war, and he was pretty lonely, I'm sure, and sitting there wrestling with some of the decisions he was having to make, and they were unpopular in a lot of quarters. But having the conviction and the courage and the strength to say, in my heart, I think we're doing the right things, and I'm going to stay with it. And you know, good things come out of that kind of commitment.
Texas A&M great R.C. Slocum joining us on the Western Company of Texas phone line. We want to take time to direct you to our radio website. That is eradiosports.com. And, you know, R.C., you were talking about the key hire defensively this year, but what about also the impact of Dat Nguyen? You had talked about him in the offseason and what a key guy he would be coming in.
Well, Dat's one of those really intelligent, highly motivated, excitable kind of guys, and there's no doubt that he has brought some of that back to our team. He's been here. He takes great pride in A&M, and particularly in A&M's defense. So
yes,
there's no question that Dat's had something to do with that too. And I'm so thrilled. One of the fun things for a coach is to see guys. You know, I can remember seeing Dat in the high school down at Fulton High School in Rockport the first time I walked in there and saw this little short guy who could barely speak English. And to see him develop and come in here, won the Lombardi Award here as an All-American linebacker, and then to play for the Dallas Cowboys, and now to be back here coaching linebackers.
Well, and you know, the players, they all look up to him so much, and as he played with so much passion. And I think that's what's been really cool as far as for the Aggies is that the mindset seems to have changed. I mean, they're coming into games now, and they're not only lining up, but they're expecting to win.
That's the biggest thing I told Coach Sherman 2 years ago. I said, the biggest challenge you have is getting these players to the point that they expect to win when they go out on the field. And I think that's that one thing we have, I think we're starting to get some of that. But if you watch teams play, they get in games, and at the end of the game, someone's going to win it or lose it. And if you're the team that thinks you're going to win it, a big part of the time, you're the ones that wins it. Now, if you get two teams, they both think they're going to win, that's when you get great football games. You know, that's what we had the other night. Oklahoma probably thought to the last drop that they were going to win that ball game. And our guys were believing they were going to win it, and we had a great game. It was a hard-fought contest, but that's starting to come around, and I'm really glad to see it.
How special is it when you win against Oklahoma?
You know, there are standards that people have, and if you look at Bob Stoops and what he's done, I have great respect for him. And if you look at the Oklahoma program, really over history, it's been a very good program. So, you know, when you beat them, you've done something. And in coaching, you can go win, and coaches know it better than anyone. You know, when you go out and win a game, then you say, yeah, we won, but. And when you play Oklahoma and beat them, you don't have to do the but. You just say, yeah, we won. We beat Oklahoma.
Well, for us Sooners, it was tough to swallow, but we definitely tip our hat to all of our Aggie fans and friends that are tuning into our program, the Big E Sports Show. Again, we want to direct you to our radio website. That's eradiosports.com. You can email us at info@eradiosports.com. Now, one thing you know about this business, RC, you can't get too high because you guys have a big test in Waco, Texas, the Baylor Bears. In many ways, they've kind of been one of the surprise teams within the Big 12. I think Oklahoma State has as well. But what do you think about this particular matchup? Certainly won't be easy, and Robert Griffin, he's a quick guy.
This game is always a hard-fought. They call it the Battle of the Brazos. It's only about 75 miles up the road here on the Brazos River, and I coached in 30 of those, and they were all almost all of them were hard-fought contests, regardless of which team had the upper hand going in. And I like Coach Briles. I think he's done a great job there at Baylor. The quarterback is a phenomenal player. Griffin is really a good player, and we'll have our hands full. There's no doubt about it. This will be a big contest. Coach Sherman knows that. Our players know that. We have great respect for them, and it'll be. I'll be there. I wouldn't miss it. I've been in, as I said, in a bunch of these, and Grant and I, back in the day, used to go head-to-head.
We had
some great contests with each other, and there were some hard-fought victories in there.
Well, you know, it's interesting, too, with this particular matchup, because Baylor's reeling a bit. I mean, they're licking their wounds from their loss in Stillwater last weekend against Oklahoma State. They're going to want to get back on track, and it'll be business as usual, as you were just giving some respect to Coach Art Briles.
Yeah. Sometimes you come off of those games and you get your most focused preparation, because you do get your feelings hurt or get embarrassed or whatever it is. It's very easy for the coach to go back and say, we've still got work to do. And I don't know. I didn't see Baylor. I didn't see that game. But sometimes, you know, they've been rolling along pretty good this year, and they, you know, it's very easy for young people to get caught up with how good they are and forget about how they got to where they are. So I'm sure this week we'll get their best shot. They'll be back to work hard at it, and they'll be well prepared for this game.
Okay, Baylor on Saturday, and the schedule doesn't get any easier or let up, because what a nationally televised game. The Nebraska Cornhuskers are going to be coming into College Station. That game's going to be a lot of fun.
Nebraska's coming in here. Of course, they've got a storied program, and this year they're giving indications they may be the best team in the Big 12 Conference. They certainly are headed that way right now. So that will be a big challenge when we get to it. But right now, we've got our hands full taking care of business, and we need to go have a good, solid game against Baylor and continue to grow our confidence and feel good about the direction we're going. And we know that won't be easy. So I'm looking forward to the game and seeing the matchup and seeing the challenge that our defense faces of trying to slow down Griffin.
You are a defensive guy. We're going to have to talk some X's and O's here momentarily, but let's shift over. Let's talk some offense. You had mentioned the young man, redshirt junior quarterback, Ryan Tannehill. Wow, he has come in, and I thought, especially in that Oklahoma game, he showed great mobility and his ability to escape pressure at times.
First thing, he's a winner. I've watched him the last couple of years playing wide receiver, and he makes some unbelievable catches, and he's the one that he'll catch it in the crowd when it's obvious that he's going to get splattered by the defense. He'll still go catch the ball, and so I've really admired his courage and his big play ability as a receiver, and I think he brings some of that with him as a quarterback as well. He's made some very big plays. What he did the first game he started was phenomenal. You see guys that over the course of their careers, they start out and they play, you know, they get playing time and they develop and eventually become a starter. This guy didn't play quarterback. You know, he played a little in the Kansas game. Next week comes back and starts, and he set a school record and completed 36 out of 50 passes for 446 yards. The first time he ever started a college game at quarterback. That's pretty impressive.
That's ice water in your veins. That's impressive. What about the other young man, Jeff Fuller? What do you think about the season that he's having?
Awesome player, and I take great pride. His dad played at Roosevelt High School over in South Dallas, And I recruited his dad out of high school.
No kidding.
And coached him here at A&M, Jeff Fuller, senior. And then he went to the 49ers and was a great player for Bill Walsh out at the 49ers. And his son is a tremendous player and just a really nice kid. I see him on a regular basis here and just love the kid. He's got the same personality his dad had, and he's got the same kind of athletic ability.
You know, it's so interesting. I mean, you've been in this business so long. What, 38 years there? You spent your life at Texas A&M. So many relationships with players. And you know, you even think about the new coach, the new kid on the block in the Big 12 Conference this year, Tommy Tuberville. And as I understand, he spent 10 months with you right there in College Station. He was, what, your defensive coordinator. I mean, that's kind of neat to see how it just kind of all...
Tom did a great job for me. You know, here in Texas, Gary Kubiak down at Houston Texans was one of my assistants.
Yeah.
Tom Tuberville is one of my assistants. Mike Sherman is one of my assistants. Kevin Sumlin at the University of Houston was one of my assistants. So that's something that really makes me proud. I had some great guys, and the success that we had certainly you can attribute to those quality coaches and to the players that we had. But I had some good men that came through here and worked for me, and I'm proud that they're all getting a chance to run their own show, and they're good coaches and good men.
Well, the coaching business, it's like a fraternity. There's no doubt. We were even sharing a little bit earlier what Wade Phillips, he's from Orange, Texas, and you've spent some time around him. You know him.
I've known Wade. I watched Wade play high school football. I'm just a little older than Wade, but I watched him play at Port Neches High School. He was actually a quarterback.
Really?
Wade was a high school quarterback at Port Neches. And then went to University of Houston, played linebacker at the University of Houston. His dad, Bum Phillips, is from Orange, and then Wade played at Port Neches. But when he got out of Houston, his first coaching job, he worked for a guy named Neil Morgan, who had played for Bum and was then the head coach at Stark High School in Orange. So Wade, his first coaching job was at my high school, the high school where I played football. And so I've known him for a long time, have great respect. He's a wonderful person, and I'm really sorry that the Cowboy thing didn't work out. And those things, there's usually a number of reasons why things don't work, but sometimes they just don't. And I know Wade, I'm sure, is disappointed, but he also knows coaching. And his dad, I think, coined the expression years ago, that there are two kinds of coaches, the ones that are fired and the ones that are going to be fired.
Yes, it's true. You know, our business is so volatile, and there's always movement that's guaranteed. Hey, R.C. Slocum along with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. We're going to talk about something that is very close, near, and dear to his heart. He is the president of the American Football Coaches Foundation. Talk to us about this wonderful organization. You guys are really helping out to just this younger generation of coaches that are coming up and helping them grow up in many ways.
One of the things that we've done, we feel coaches' role in our society is very important. They are the ones that throughout this country are dealing with young people on a daily basis, and we think it's important that they are trained in the right ethics and the right procedures. So every year we have a national convention, and it's a 4 or 5 day seminar. We take our top coaches and have programs where these younger guys can sit in lectures and hear the masters of the game talk about coaching and about the responsibility that coaches have to young people. Now, if you're coaching at Nebraska or Texas A&M or the big programs, the school sends you to the convention. They pay your way to go. But that's only a small part of our coaches. Most of our coaches, if you're at Sam Houston or you're at Tarleton or you're at those type schools, it's a hard thing for you to get to the convention. This year, it's in Dallas. But, you know, it'll go to Orlando or St. Louis or Los Angeles or somewhere like that. So you'll have three or four of these guys driving in a car together and trying to, you know, sleep three or four guys to a room at the convention just to be there. Now, the thing that we do with the American Football Coaches Association, we keep our membership and convention fee to the bare minimum. and we can't do it. It's $50. You can join. You can be a member of the American Football Coaches Association, get all the publications, and attend the convention. And we can't do it. You can't make ends meet. So to supplement that, several years ago, we said we got to do one, two things. We have to dramatically raise our fees, or we got to find some other source of income. For years, you'll recall, we had the coaches' classic, the kickoff classic that the coaches got. We got the proceeds of that, but when we went to 12-game schedule, that game went away. So we created the foundation, and the number one thing we do every year, we have a CEO Coach of the Year. This year we're honoring Fred Smith, the CEO of FedEx, and he'll be recognized at a dinner at the Waldorf in New York next month. And I'll be there for that. We've over the last several years, we've had Jeffrey Immelt was our first honoree, the CEO of General Electric, who played football at Dartmouth. And so we honor these guys, and the proceeds from the dinner go to the American Football Coaches Foundation, which allows us to support our coaches across the country.
You know, talking about supporting the coaches across your country, I have to ask you, you know, when you go to these banquets, these dinners, or you're on the golf course, what is some of the feedback that you get from these young men, some of the biggest challenges perhaps that they face as coaches today?
Well, one of the big things, I think it's common knowledge that our family structure has disintegrated dramatically in this country. You've got a whole bunch of these kids that have no father figure around them, and that coach becomes that figure. And I think we talk all the time, if you went throughout the country and stopped men on the street and said, okay, let me ask you something. Other than your father, if he was a factor in your life, who in your life had the biggest influence? Invariably, if they were involved at all in athletics, they'll say, my coach. Man, I had my coach, my junior high coach, my high school coach, or coaches. That's something that coaches take great pride in. I heard someone on the radio yesterday just talking about mentoring young people, and coaches, the coaches that I know and respect over the years, I look at the guys that coached me and the interest they took in me as a person. And so coaches play a huge role in our society. Just think, if you could go just in your area up there in North Texas, think of all the high schools and think of, you know, 100 kids or how many kids in every school that are directly influenced by the coaches that are there. And many of these kids don't have a day-to-day father figure that's saying, son, you can't do that. That's not good for you. You can't act like that. You can't dress like that. You can't do those things. And to have somebody fulfilling that role, I think, tremendous effect that these coaches have on these young people.
It's interesting. I recall one of our earlier conversations, and you shared, you know, when Father's Day rolls around in the month of June, that your phone, you know, rings off the hook, or you're getting emails from former players that really look to you in many ways as that father figure. I mean, it was more than what happened on the gridiron or on the field. I mean, you truly loved them and cared about them as a person.
That's the real rewards of coaching. And a lot of time, you know, we're all evaluated by wins and losses, and we all accept that. But in the bigger picture of things, and I told people, I'm a Christian, and I've believed in my mind someday that I would be held accountable for my role as a coach. And when the big head coach sits me down to go over what I did, he's not going to be nearly as concerned with the wins and losses. And he said, I gave you a bunch of young men down there every year under your leadership, and I want to talk to you about what you did with them. And I wanted to have good answers when that time came. And so I feel good about the way we did things, and it was fun. That was a fun part of the job. And any coach, Spike Dykes I talked to on a regular basis, and I know Spike was the same kind of guy I talked to Coach Royal, the Grant Taft, the guys that relished the role of being someone who could influence these young people in the right way and help kids. A lot of times you get them, and maybe they have had a good father, but you get them in college when they're away from home for the first time, and it's very easy for guys to get off the right track and to be there nudging them back toward those values that they've been taught is an important role for the coach. And if they haven't had those values, then it's an even greater role of saying, hey, let me tell you, and I care enough about you, I'm doing this because I want you to be somebody. I want you to have a happy, productive life. And there's some things you need to understand about how all this works.
And that was one of the things that I loved about your commencement speech, because you did talk about doing what's right, honesty, character. You had just mentioned the values, but you also challenged, you know, to give back, to make sure that you're taking time, that it's, you know, treating others the way that you would want to be treated.
Well, I think all those things, I think, you know, if you're not careful, you leave those out. I tell people right now, you know, it's easy to be on your soapbox, you know, all the time, but you know, people talk about kids today, and I say, you know, I don't think kids have changed. I think the kids are saying it's the parents that have changed. Parents don't take the time to say, you can't act like that. You can't do that. I tell you a little quick. You have time to tell you.
Absolutely. Coach, go for it, Coach.
My wife, last we were walking across, we were playing a school. I won't even name the school, but back earlier in the year, a year ago, now walking across the campus, we have a great game day atmosphere. And all the kids and the parents were out and everything. And now I'm walking. I'm going from, I've been to one meeting. I'm headed over to the stadium to go up in the press. And I'm walking, and these three college-age kind of kids were walking facing me. And just as they went by, they were talking in the loudest voices with the most profane, vulgar language you've ever heard.
Wow.
And it just, I couldn't. They passed me around when I turned around. I said, hey. And they turned around and said, hey, you don't talk like that around here. What's wrong with you?
Yeah.
You see all these women and kids here? Yeah. Who do you think you are? You know, the walk through here using that kind of a language. And I just said, man. And my wife said, dang. I thought, you know, I thought, you know, you're going off. And I said, you know, it's just, it irritates me to think that as a society, here's three young guys coming through there, oblivious that these people all around you, little kids there and ladies that have had no more training. You know, if they're out on a fishing trip, the three of those guys, and they want to talk to each other like that, I'm all for it if that's what they want. But to walk through a crowd of mixed people there and young people and be using that kind of language, I want them to know I didn't approve of it.
You know, it's stunning just how much times have changed. And it's interesting you bring up a great point, because I think of Turner Gill at Kansas, and he has certainly set the bar, the standard, very, very high. And some folks have been kind of critical of him, but that he is not even allowing swearing taking place, any kind of, you know, bad language, you know, even at practice. I thought that, I've never heard of anything like that before when he's talking about football.
Well, I tell you, I didn't do that either. You know, I didn't curse my players, and I didn't curse someone else's players, and I didn't want my coaches. I don't think you can. I told my coaches, you can be as tough and demanding as you want to be, but I don't want you cursing guys. We have kids that in this state grow up in a background where they're not exposed to that kind of language. You know, they may be at school, but I'm proud to say I grew up in a home. Both my parents are dead now. I never heard either of my parents say a curse word. And I didn't want to come in there and have a coach down on one end of the field just wearing some kid out. And all of a sudden, I always made it, our parents could come to practice anytime they wanted to. And I didn't want little Johnny's mother to walk in and me say, I got to get out there and tell him to watch his language because his mother's here now.
Uh-huh.
She's going to hear how we really talk to her son. I didn't want to be in that position. I said, you know, you can be tough and demanding, but using that. And so I thought it kind of cheapened or lessened what you were trying to say to some of the kids. So I just said, no place for it. You know, we don't need to do that. I don't curse my own son, and I don't want you cursing him, and I'm not going to curse somebody else's son.
We are getting ready to wrap up our interview with R.C. Slocum. He always shares some great stuff. You never know where our conversation is going to go. It's always wide-ranging. And, of course, it is game day. We're looking forward to the big game, TCU-San Diego State. And it is frog fever right here in Fort Worth. You really have to tip your hat to Gary Patterson and his team and just what they've been able to accomplish this season. It really is remarkable.
It should be frog fever. I tell you, he's done an awesome job up there, and I'm really proud of him, admire him and his team and the way they play. And, you know, did that Utah game, you know, a lot of people was really looking at that to be a great ball game, and they led into them and turned them every way but loose. You know what I mean? It's just amazing. And I hope they can keep doing what they're doing. I'm one that personal thing, I would like to see a playoff, and so I hope Gary can keep doing what he's doing, and I hope he can make an issue this year. If they keep doing what they're doing the rest of the season, then they ought to get into that national championship game someplace. So.
Well, I had to ask you about the Frogs because, of course, you're a defensive-minded guy, and you love defense, and nobody's doing it better than Coach Patterson.
When I look at them, they remind me of what we used to do, and I think Gary gets those some of those kinds of players. I think his philosophy is similar to what mine was, and he goes out and gets some guys that can run, and he moves them around, and, you know, if you're trying to block them, you're going to have to hit a moving target because they're not going to be sitting there. They're going to be moving, and they can move. And so I really admire his scheme, and he's done an unbelievable job there. I tell people, you know, my last bowl win was against Gary and against TCU, and we played down in Houston in the Gowrie Bowl down there. And, you know, at the time, some of our people kind of said, oh, well, you know, they beat TCU or whatever. And I said, you know, I told someone this week, we might have been coaching a little better than what they thought we were.
That's a very good way to put it. Well, listen, RC, we're flat out of time. What a pleasure to have you on, and have a wonderful Thanksgiving. We have so many things to be thankful for. Thanks, RC.
Always a pleasure.
You bet. We're going to step aside. Much more straight ahead here in just a moment. We'll be right back.